each of us as a photographer has something inside of us that's kind of telling us what pictures to take. I think most of the time we brush that off. That thing knows what's going to make us happy, but we start questioning it. Oh, well, what's the point of that photo? I saw a photo like that already that someone else took. That's the side of us that we need to like tamp down and just let that thing come up that says, hey, you should go take this photo. Why? Don't worry about it. Just go take it. And then if you go out and take it, it may end up being one of your best photos ever and people may love it. And then you can kind of trust that inner voice more.
Welcome to episode 319 of the Beginner Photography Podcast, brought to you by CloudSpot, the easiest way to deliver and sell photos online. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and today we are chatting with fine art landscape photographer Nick Carver about shooting large format film and creating your own projects. So many of you know, a few weeks ago, me and my family, we went out to California. Specifically, we stayed in Laguna Beach. And surprisingly, even after having lived probably just about 40 minutes away for a number of years, I never made it down to Laguna Beach before this trip. So when we got there, I was looking for some inspiration of what others were photographing in Laguna Beach. Sometimes this can give you an idea of what is happening around town or some interesting spots that you may want to check out for yourself, right? So that is when I found a video on YouTube by today's guest, Nick Carver, who photographed a set of three palm trees in an area called Heisler Park in Laguna Beach. And having been there a few days previously, it was really cool to see how another photographer saw and captured a location that I had also shot. And it was also cool to see him shooting on large format film. This stuff is crazy. Take some chances and make a great image still. So after all of that, we get back from our trip, right? I get home and I have an email waiting for me from a listener. I hope I say this right. Eric Fagerstorm. He said, Raymond, you got to check out this fine art photographer, Nick Carver. He is creating some amazing images and his educational style on YouTube is unlike anybody else. So right away, I was like, looks like the stars have aligned. I got to get Nick on the podcast. And I'm very glad that we did because we tackle a lot today. So buckle in for today's podcast with Nick Carver. Nick, my first question for you is, when did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
I was lucky to find it pretty young. I was probably about 12. There was a class in my middle school that wasn't a photography class. It was actually it's called a technology class, and it had little modules. You could study things for like 2 weeks at a time. So it was like a wood shop section and a robotics section, all that kind of stuff. And one of them was darkroom. Mm-hmm. So it was long enough ago that it was black and white darkroom photography, which is really cool. My friend really wanted to do it. And I said, that sounds stupid. Photography sounds super boring. But he kept pushing and pushing. And I took it and kind of fell in love immediately. About a year later, convinced my parents to buy me a 35 millimeter film camera from a pawn shop. And then it wasn't too long after that I decided I wanted to like pursue it for a living.
Actually, really? So like before 15, 16 years old, you knew?
Yeah, it was right about that time. So kind of early high school. I just decided, I don't know, I guess I hadn't really been thinking much about what I wanted to do with my life after high school up until that point. But then that's kind of when that starts coming in, you know, in high school, they start prepping you for college and doing all that crazy stuff, which I do not miss because that was just an unbelievable amount of stress. But yeah, so I kind of started, you know, gears started turning. Oh, okay. Photographer is a career. I've seen photographers, you know, that I've been watching the past few years. I would love to be doing what they're doing. Little did I know what I thought they were doing was not at all a career. And I had to disabuse myself of a lot of ideas of what making a living as a photographer actually is. Cause, I just had it wrong. But that was a long journey that started there. It took me probably a decade before I really realized how to make, you know, a good living as a photographer. But so I decided pretty early it's what I wanted to do.
That's awesome. So you thought that photographers were just like taking photos all day long on beaches or something and that was it?
Yeah, well, the ones I looked up to were all nature photographers. Mm-hmm. So these guys aren't as in the photography zeitgeist anymore, but it'd be like Art Wolf, Franz Lanting, Thomas Mangelson. These guys are the very like nature based, and a couple of them are National Geographic photographers. And you know, I was looking at their books, and I was looking at, back then there weren't even much of in the way of websites. It was, you know, but I had this idea of, you know, they were just going out and taking pictures of beautiful scenery, and someone was paying them, and they were clearly making a living at it because they weren't doing anything else. And Thomas Mangelson, especially, he had galleries all over the place. He had one in Santa Barbara and a few other places I visited, and he'd have these big, beautiful prints. And they were really cool because he was shooting all film, and he was doing cyberchrome prints or ilfochrome prints, which is, for anyone who doesn't know that's listening, that's when you make a print from the negative directly, but it's not from a negative, it's from a positive. So he's shooting reversal film, which again, for anyone who doesn't know, reversal film is the opposite of a negative. It's actually a positive image. So when you put it on the light table, you're looking at the correct image. It's actually really cool. So that's what they used to use to project images for slideshows. But you used to be able to make prints from those directly onto this paper that was just gorgeous. And the prints were huge, and he was shooting panoramic a lot of the time, 6x17 formats, which I later got into. But I saw all these prints on the walls, and I thought, you know, I was 13, 14 years old. I'm like, this is what I want to do for a living. I just want to decide to take a trip to Alaska, take a bunch of pretty pictures, and then put them on a wall, and people are going to be flocking to the store, and they're going to be buying all my prints. And that's how I'm going to make my living. And that is what I went into photography planning to do. And that fell apart pretty quick.
Just nothing but self-assignments, hoping that people would be busting down their doors. And,
yeah, everyone's going to want my photos, yeah. Obviously.
I want to take a step back before we move forward here. Talking about this technology class, you said that there was like robotics and a few other things, and photography was like the last thing on your list. Mm-hmm. So when you got into photography, like, what was it about it that made you think, like, you know what, actually, this is pretty awesome, and decide to go forward with that instead of something, I don't know, futuristic like robotics?
It's actually the tactile experience of it. So, like, I think if it had been digital photography, I probably wouldn't have caught on to it. Mm. It was the darkroom process that really grabbed me. Cause like, I wanted to do the woodshop section because I wanted to do something with my hands. I like working with my hands. I like building things. I like creating something that I can actually, you know, pick up at the end of it. And the photography side of it, I didn't know anything about, like, okay, you're going to take a picture, but then you're going to have to load the film into a canister in the dark, and then you're going to have to pour chemicals into it, and you're going to have to then put that negative into an enlarger and create a print. I didn't know about all that tactical side of photography. I thought you just take your film to the local drugstore and they give you prints.
Take care of it,
So when I got into the darkroom, that's when I was like, this is freaking awesome. Like, I'm making something. It's an involved process. There's a lot to do. And it's a creative process, which I've always been more attracted to creative endeavors throughout my entire life. So it kind of checked all the boxes for me in terms of tactile stuff I could work with, creativity. And it's just a lot of fun working in a dark room.
Sure. What were some of those earlier struggles? Because there is quite a steep learning curve. If you have no idea anything, you had no idea about photography going into this. You know, yeah. You thought that you just took it to a 1-hour photo place. So with how many steps there are involved, there's a lot of room for error. So what were some of those earlier struggles that you faced?
I think with, you know, kind of like everyone, learning just the basics of exposure and understanding how light behaves is difficult in the beginning. I mean, fortunately for me, I never really got frustrated with that. And I'm pretty prone to frustration. But that never really was so difficult that it frustrated me. I actually very much enjoyed learning that part of it. It was kind of fun to figure out how, you know, the aperture affects the image, or the shutter affects the image, or whatever. Most of my difficulties, I think, came with struggling with finding my own voice as a photographer and as an artist, and then also how to parlay that into an actual living. Mm-hmm. That was very difficult to figure out and took a long time. And as far as the, you know, finding my own voice and finding my own creativity, I feel like that's still a constant struggle. You know, I've been doing this 22, 23 years, something like that. And I still feel like there's a lot more to evolve on that, becoming a photographer that isn't just copying other photographers, in some sense. And I still feel like I'm doing that a lot of the time. So that's been a struggle early on and continues to be.
You still feel like you emulate a lot of photographers often?
Yeah. It's I tend not to consume very much photography for that reason. There's a photographer I came across a long time ago. I always blank on his name. Pretty sure it's Cole Thompson. But black and white photographer. And he had this idea of photographic celibacy, which is you don't look at anybody's work ever. And his argument was it just keeps your creativity as pure and clean as possible so that you're not being influenced by anyone. And then you have raw internal creativity coming out in your photography. Mm-hmm. And that has, I'm not as militant about it as he preaches, but I generally try not to consume a lot of work because I'm very prone to that feeling of like, oh, I'm just copying that other one I saw. And I'm very prone to like, if I see a photo that's really freaking awesome, I really want to create that same photo. And I don't want that to be a driving force in my photography at all. I've gotten through a lot of the difficulties of that, to where now I don't consume a ton of photography is a big help. I'm also just having done it long enough, I'm more comfortable with what I want to create in photos rather than what I think everyone else wants to see, which is a difficult hurdle to get over, because especially with social media and stuff now, you really want kind of natural to want to create photos that people are going to like. Sure. But having done it as long as I have, I'm a little bit past that. But I still feel like, okay, I'm either repeating myself too much. I'm kind of copying the previous version of me that, you know, that one photo got enough likes to where I'm letting it weigh too much on what I'm shooting now. Or if I find another photographer that I really admire, I can still feel like I'm kind of copying their work. I mean, the perfect example is, I don't consume a lot of photography, but one of the ones that I do really consume, I love his work, is Gregory Crutzen. Creates these really surreal kind of cinematic scenes of people in kind of Midwest and environments and stuff like that. It's hard to describe without seeing it, but my work is very strongly influenced by his, and it still is. And I don't want to copy him, but the way he works with lighting and all that kind of stuff, I'm ultimately kind of trying to emulate that. So I don't even like having that much influence on my work, but that's about as good as I can get it right now, to where there's just one photographer that's kind of influencing what I'm doing. But I don't feel like I'm directly copying anyone at the moment. But that can always come back, that feeling.
That's interesting. I often feel the same feeling. If I spend too much time looking at somebody, obviously I'm looking at them because I'm interested in their work, and then seeing more of it will influence you on how to shoot. With learning, I think it was David Duchemin who said that like the best photo school, like the best way to learn photography, would just be one camera, one lens, and then 365 rolls of film, and then you go out and shoot every day. You don't look at anybody's work, and then you just come back and focus on your own photos to develop and obviously become a better photographer, which obviously makes sense. But do you think that that's something like that is practical? Like, do you think that we can live in today's society with how prevalent social media is and not be influenced by other photographers? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
Yeah, I as you say, with social media and stuff, it just being so unavoidable, I think it may not be possible anymore. But, you know, that approach of kind of like just go out and take as many pictures as possible and not get involved with the photography community, essentially. I could definitely see value in that. Especially now with so much social media, I'm glad I'm not a beginner now.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. Which I don't want to make anyone who's a beginner now feel discouraged or anything. There's still so much to do and there's so much, you know, so many fun ways to go about it. But when I started, I really couldn't be influenced too much because there was no Instagram, there was no, you know, Facebook or YouTube or anything like that. That I learned everything through books, and books, they're not perfect, but they're relatively vetted, you know, because for a photographer at that time to have a book had to kind of prove that they knew what they were doing, had to have some sort of track record of being either a professional or being a you know, recognized photography instructor. And so everything I learned was quite truthful and held up, and it wasn't, you know, the blind leading the blind. Because I think what happens sometimes with social media and stuff is it's beginners teaching other beginners the stuff they learned. Mm-hmm. And I taught photography in a one-on-one capacity for, I don't know, this decade or something like that. And so I was intimately aware of how beginners learn and how poorly they convey the information they just learned. Because I'd be in a workshop and I would hear students talking to each other. And I would hear a student telling another student, oh, no, this is how it's done. And they were completely wrong. So there's just this problem now, I think, where you can get too much influence from people who aren't really fully developed themselves. Mm-hmm. As photographers. And that can be probably not great for your photography, I would think, in the beginning. It's probably not even great later on in photography. But I mean, then again, on the flip side of that token, there's so many more ways to learn now. So you can probably learn a lot quicker than when I started. But yeah, it's hard to keep those inspirational avenues clear today, because you really can't avoid photos. I mean, unless you're difficult. Completely off the internet. Mm-hmm. Can't avoid them. They're everywhere.
How do you think we solve that issue then of finding the right educator for you? Do you think that learning online is still a viable option, or do you think that these things should all be done in a, I don't know, classroom setting or something? Or does it depend on the person?
Yeah, I think it depends on the teacher. You know, I've known in-person instructors that are fantastic. I've known ones that are terrible. And same thing with online. I think probably the best way someone can kind of learn this stuff is learn from multiple sources and then try everything. Right. And see what actually works out for you. And as I say in my own courses, you know, there's usually more than one way to skin a cat. So if you learn something and then find another instructor going directly contradictory to that, saying that's not how it's done at all, there's a good chance they're both right. You know, it's just two different ways to do it. And so you kind of have to try both ways and see if one of them is less efficient than the other, or see if one of them jives better with your style. So I think it's a lot more sifting through information for modern photographers. I think that it's just kind of information overload, but, you know, don't get too attached to one photographer or one instructor, because there might be other ways to do it that are better or just work better with your style or whatever. And it's good to learn as much as possible, but then you really got to go out and actually apply it in the field to see what works.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. The only way to actually learn something or whether or not it's good information is to apply it to yourself and see if it works for you. I love it. So let's go back to those early days in photography. I want to know, because today, your gig is you shoot lots of medium, large format film. But in those early days, you had that 35 millimeter camera. What sorts of things were you shooting?
It's all nature. I started out, actually wanted to be a wildlife photographer. And then I found out pretty quick there were two problems with that. One was the equipment was just way too damn expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I started it, you know, when I was 12 and 13. So, a $5,000, you know, 300 millimeter F2.8 lens might as well have been $1 million, because I'm never going to have $5,000 for that. So, that was the biggest hurdle, is the equipment. But I also found out pretty quick too, I don't have the patience for it. I think with wildlife photography, it's a lot of, waiting in one spot for the animal to get in the right position. And, you know, some of the guys go so far as to camouflage themselves. And, you know, it's almost like hunting in that sense. And, I'm too fidgety. I needed to get the photo done and move on to the next photo. So, ended up not working well for me. So I kind of, just fell into landscape photography because I was already into nature stuff and I was already outside, hoping to photograph wildlife. And then when I got bored with that, I would start shooting landscapes. And then, much lower barrier to entry on landscape photography. The equipment's not nearly as, overwhelming. So, that ended up kind of becoming my main thing.
Mm-hmm. So you got into landscapes, and then, so I know obviously film, natural progression, you go from 35 to medium to then to large format. We're kind of in this world where obviously film is still around, but I think we could both agree that digital is most prevalent, right, in photography. So what is it about film that keeps you sticking around and going through just the additional steps required to shoot on it?
Yeah, I had a weird progression with the formats too, because I started on 35 millimeter because that's basically all there was. Digital was on the scene, but it was too expensive and the resolution was too small, so no one was really doing it. And then as I got deeper into photography, digital came along. So then I ditched 35 millimeter and went all digital in about 2006 or something like that. And then I came back to film in 2012 because I was pretty depressed in my photography, and the film was the only thing that excited me anymore, but that's another story. So I got back into film, and I was going to get back into 35 millimeter because that's all I knew. But then I kind of quickly realized, okay, well, I haven't tried large format. So I actually jumped from 35 millimeter all the way to 4x5, skipped over medium format.
Wow.
Started shooting that. And then I came back and kind of did medium format after getting back into large format. But the reason I continue to shoot it is, I guess the workflow just kind of suits, what I need from photography. I need a little bit of delayed gratification. I need the stakes to be a little bit higher, when I take a photo. I don't know why. I don't know that it's even a healthy thing to feel that way. I just kind of, when I go to take the photo, if I know it's costing me $2 when I take the photo and I only have 4 pictures to get it right, the process is far more enjoyable for me. And then having to wait a little bit to see what those pictures are going to be, helps keep me in the moment. Cause when I'm shooting, I still shoot a ton of digital cause all my client work is all digital. And, you know, I'm spending so much time looking at the screen and reviewing the photos and, you know, right away, seeing if everything came out. It just has a different feel to the process, and my connection to the pictures is so much different. Mm-hmm. It's obviously way more efficient with digital. I'm much more likely to get the shot with digital, but when I'm doing my own personal work, I don't know. I guess I like to live dangerously or something. I don't know what it is. I just kind of need that, the higher stakes for it to feel like it's fulfilling me fully.
Now, you say that in your personal work, you'll shoot film, but I know that you do sell prints of yours, right? Fine art landscape prints that are also on film. So I guess, can you kind of walk me through a little bit about your business and how it works from a photography standpoint?
Yeah. Yeah, I call it personal work because I choose to take those pictures on my own accord. But I guess it's kind of professional work because I'm hoping to make money from it. But I kind of have two facets of my business. So I'm a commercial architectural photographer. So I photograph office buildings primarily, but also industrial buildings and occasionally retail centers. And then I have the other side of my business, which is basically kind of the photos I want to take combined with the YouTube videos I want to make. And those usually go hand in hand in some capacity. But that's all just stuff from my own brain that I want to create. No one's telling me that's what they want. And so that satisfies a real important side of creativity for me that the business side of shooting architectural photography doesn't, because it's an assignment. I know what pictures they need. It's still very much a creative endeavor and it's very enjoyable. And I love my job on that side of it, but that's a different approach to things.
So when you go out to shoot, I'm always interested in this, right? So you go out to shoot, the fact that you sell your like prints, say of that photo behind you, right? Large landscape photo. You want to obviously eventually sell that. So you get it printed, you get it framed and everything. Now this is a world that I'm not in at all. So I'm very interested in this. May sound like a dumb question. When you go out to shoot, do you have some sort of end goal, like of where a photo might end up, like that photo behind you? Did you know that that was going to end up in a large print like that? Or do these things sort of develop after you take the photo and you look at it after it's been developed and edited?
It kind of depends on the subject. That one in particular that's behind me, I just took that photo because I really wanted to take it. I didn't have any idea what was going to be done with it. In fact, I didn't even film a YouTube video when I took that picture, which I normally try and get something out of the photo. Like I'll make a video about it so people can see me taking the picture, or I'll take the picture hoping it's going to contribute to this other thing. That one was completely just a photo I really wanted to take when I was out camping. And that might give some insight into why it's hanging on the wall, I guess. I mean, it was pure enjoyment taking that photo. So that might be why I like it so much. But I usually try and have some sort of end purpose in mind with the photo, of it contributing to a book one day. That's kind of what's been driving me a lot lately, is I really would like to put together a book of my pictures and offer it to anyone who's interested. And I don't feel like my portfolio is robust enough at this point to fill a book. So a lot of times when I go out to take a picture, I'm kind of picturing it as one of the pages one day. And then I recently started a project that I hope to also be a book one day. But being from California, you probably know this, but Taco Bell used to have a building that was the same design everywhere. It had three arch windows out front and then an arch up top. And there's mm-hmm. a bell way at the top of the building. And they've abandoned those buildings. They don't use them anymore. So a lot of them got torn down and new Taco Bell built on top of it. But a lot of them, they just sold to someone else. And then so there's all these businesses that are in these old Taco Bell buildings. So the project I have right now is, I'm calling it Previously Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go photograph as many of them as I can find with, cool terrain around them and all that kind of stuff. And that's been a nice thing to kind of get me excited to go out and take pictures. Because some photographers do really well with the approach of, I'm just going to put myself in some environment and see what pictures arise. I'm just going to find pictures when I get there. I don't really do too well with that approach. I work much better if I kind of give myself an assignment. So if I am working on this project, it's contributing to a book or it's contributing to a print I want to make or something like that, that I tend to be much more excited about going out to take pictures, and it kind of keeps me focused. So the previously Taco Bell project is what's got me going right now, but who knows how long that'll last. Sometimes these things fade out.
Right. I get that. Yeah. Especially with personal projects. And for something like a building, we have one in our town that is now a Froyo place.
And, oh, really?
It's hilarious. I mean, it's right like in front of a school and stuff, but right next door to it is one of the newly built Taco Bells. So
I'm finding that's the case for a lot of these. There'll be one of these old buildings, and then just within eyeshot, there's a new Taco Bell. So they just move just a little bit down. Obviously, a successful location.
Yeah,
but right.
Like that's
I'm
going to
hit you up for that location.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to hit you up for that address because I'm building up a list of every previously Taco Bell I can find. Yeah. And for anyone who's listening, mail@previouslytacobell.com. If you know of one in your area, please let me know because I'm planning on doing a road trip at some point.
Put that in the show notes just in case anybody wants to get that if they're driving right now. That is too
and
fun.
Previouslytacobell.com if they want to see the photos I've taken so far.
Oh, but
the whole project's going to be on film, so large format film and medium format film, and shooting it the way I like to shoot it. And hopefully it'll be a book one day if I get enough of them. Could be fun.
So this isn't where the interview was going, but now I'm interested in this. In the have you made mini books like this before? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
No, I've actually only ever made books for personal use. So like, from vacations or whatever.
Sure, sure.
It's so gratifying making a book. It is like one of the best things in the world to flip through this book that you've worked so hard on, and it's all these pictures. So I'm really interested to do it. I'm really excited to do it. I just haven't felt that I have a collection of images worthy of a book yet.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully maybe this previously Taco Bell project will be the
one. We'll get there.
Yeah. The one.
I like it. So when it comes to, let's get back to landscape photography here a little bit. I want to know, lots of people today can go out either with their iPhone or, their entry level camera and say that they love landscape photography and go out and take these photos, right? Somebody like you who is a fine art landscape photographer, I'm always interested in that term fine art. Like, so can you describe to me, what does fine art mean to you?
Yeah. Yeah. So that term fine art, always makes me cringe a little bit when I use it. it's such a strange term. It feels like you're really putting your own work up on a pedestal when you call it fine art, but I just don't know any other word for it. I've called it wall art, but that somehow makes it sound really terrible. So I don't really know what to call it. So fine art. Yeah, man, I got a lot of thoughts on this, but the photography is such an interesting art form because it's not taken that seriously in like the real art world, So like, modern art museums and all that kind of stuff, they don't really take photography all that seriously. It's a lot better than it used to be, but for a time, I mean, it was a joke. I mean, it was not considered an art form for a very, very long time. And then so kind of what that world calls fine art photography, can sometimes just be kind of weird photography that's not really anything that a photographer would admire or appreciate. It's just kind of, I mean, it's like any modern art. You look at a rock on a pedestal and it's called modern art and people, you know, roll their eyes. I think some fine art, some photography, which is categorized as fine art, can sometimes fall into that category. But for the rest of us, I kind of view fine art photography as just a catch-all term for making prints that people would want to hang on their walls. So that's why I've sometimes called it wall art. And, you know, that avenue of my business, was the thing that I wanted to do originally. So when I saw Thomas Mangelson's galleries and, a more modern, version of Thomas Mangelson would be Peter Lick. I'm sure a lot of people know Peter Lick. Peter Lick is the modern version. Mm-hmm. But that's what I wanted. Is just like, okay, prints that people want to hang on their walls and, you know, sell them for a bunch of money, limited editions, all that kind of stuff. And then that's one of the ideas I had to be disabused of pretty quick in my photography journey, my photography career, because I found out that's not really a job. And that doesn't really exist as a viable income source. Mm-hmm. Like I have prints for sale on my website. I don't sell more than a dozen prints per year. And I'm fairly well known in the photography world. So if anyone's going to be able to sell a few, it'd probably be me because I got a good YouTube following. But I don't sell too many. And if you think about it, you know, how many are you really going to sell? How many people have walls that need artwork on it and are willing to drop a pretty penny for a unique print? Most people just go to Target and pick up, you know, a washed out picture of a steer with the long horns, the photo everyone has.
Yeah, right.
I really enjoy offering prints. I love it when people buy it. It's hugely flattering, especially when they get shipped to, you know, another hemisphere and that kind of thing. But it's more for the enjoyment than the reliance on the income, for sure.
Okay, so then I guess what I'm trying to get at here is when you're out there actually shooting, right? What is it that you are doing? Now, this may sound like a stupid question. What is it that you are doing to ensure that your photo is different than somebody who just grabs their iPhone, holds up their phone, snaps it, goes back to camping, drinking beers, doing whatever they were doing?
Yeah. That's not a stupid question at all. That's kind of the, that's the whole struggle. That basically sums up the struggle of my life right there. Just how can I take this photo so that it's going to mean something more than just a snapshot of this place?
How have you done
that? Or even taken to the extreme, because I shoot a lot of buildings in urban areas now. How am I going to take a photo that's better or more meaningful than the Google Street View that came by 3 months earlier and has a shot of all these things? And you can pan around and see the building fully. I've tried to have my work be steered more by a gut feeling than anything. And a gut feeling of like, I just want to see this photo. That's really all it boils down to. One thing that kind of stuck with me that I heard a long, long time ago, actually from a comedian on a podcast, he said, isn't the point of art to create something you haven't seen before? And he said it like kind of exclaiming, like, isn't that why we're doing all this? Like he was kind of joking about it, but it really stuck with me. It's like, oh yeah, that's really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to create something I haven't seen yet. And I think that's what a lot of photographers are doing, at least, at least once we all get bored of just making the best impression of the photographer we like, which I did for many, many years. So it's at many years of just doing the best version of a Thomas Mangelson photo or my best impression of a Galen Rowell photo or whatever. But then eventually that gets kind of boring. So I try and just create photos of things I haven't really seen before, things I would like to see. And then in terms of like a more nuts and bolts technical aspect to how you make it more unique or to stand out better. For me, it's all the quality of the light. Timing is massive. The cloud cover is massive. And putting the dedication into going back multiple times, if that's what it requires. I've had many photos where I've gone back six or seven times just scouting it or hoping the light is going to be perfect. And it's a picture of a freaking tire shop, you know, or it's something that is so meaningless on the surface. But if I can get it at just the right conditions, it's going to scratch that itch in the creative side of my brain to where I feel like I've done something, you know, I've made something new. And the photo may not end up meaning anything to anybody. And maybe that's a failure in that sense. But in the sense of the process of photography is going the way I want it to go, or it's satisfying what I need from it, it's a success. And then hopefully all that work I put into it makes that photo an art piece instead of a snapshot from a phone. Because I put in the effort of making sure the light was just right and the timing was just right. And I don't know, I feel like, you know, those old jokes of stuff of like, you know, you could frame a blank canvas on a wall in a modern art museum. And just the fact that it's framed and it's in a modern art museum, it'll go for $100,000,
sure.
You know, and there's nothing on the canvas. And there's probably some truth to that, that I'm relying on the fact that I made a video about it and I went through all the process of all the work I put into it. And now it's framed and hanging on the wall. Maybe that's the only thing that's really giving it that much value, but, you know, I guess that's a risk I have to take and just kind of keep taking photos that I want to see and that I haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it'll come out in the wash and people will think it's better than an iPhone snapshot.
Right. Right. But like doing that, like what's the downside? You know what I mean? Like, I don't see a downside to that for you wanting to, for you seeing a photo, having an idea for it, envisioning it, going out with your camera, seeing that it's not right, leaving it, coming back, waiting for it, you know, even making a video about it. I don't see any sort of downside to it. And I don't think that that necessarily artificially inflates the worth of a photo at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because when it comes to photography, one of the things that I'm struggling with now as I figure out how to transition out of wedding photography into something else is more of that, like learning to trust myself as an artist rather than, well, here on a wedding day, I know that I need to get X, Y, Z, and then everything else I can kind of do myself. And I think that I'm kind of coming to the conclusion of like, going back to what you said, like if you can just be, if you can abstain from seeing other people's artwork, you'll have to create art that you like. And at the end of the day, that should be all that matters, mm-hmm. right? But when it comes to owning a business, right, dollars also matter. So is there anything that you do to, I don't want to say ensure that prints get sold, but I guess just, you know, ensure that your clients will actually like the photos that you're taking or anything like that? Does that question make sense or is that a terrible question?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I really like what you said about what's the downside, because that's one of the things that really kind of drove me into this approach to photography is like, I spent so much time taking pictures that I thought would sell prints. And I was doing like real high saturation landscape stuff with kind of epic foregrounds, a lot of wide angle, you know, stuff that I thought people wanted to hang on their wall. And that steered me for so long. And it was miserable. Because first off, no one was buying the pictures. So you feel like you're failing in that sense. But also, I wasn't really taking the pictures that I absolutely wanted to take. And then I eventually just kind of said, screw it. I'm just going to start taking photos I want to take then. Because if they're not going to sell anyway, I might as well take photos that I want to take. And ironically, that's when I started to get more popular. And that's when people started to notice my work more. So there really is no downside. Like, just go out and take the pictures you really want to take. Unless you are currently selling a million prints of the photos you're taking now that you don't want to take, there's no downside to ditching that. You know, it's like, and there's no risk really. You take the photos you want to take, you're going to feel better. You're going to enjoy photography more. You're more likely to stick with it. And your work is much more likely to get better. And I think that's, I mean, we're all doing this because we like photography and we enjoy it.
Yeah.
So whatever it takes to keep you enjoying it is what has to be done. And if people like the photos or not is kind of out of your control. But I really feel like each of us as a photographer has something inside of us that's kind of telling us what pictures to take. And I think most of the time we brush that off. And that thing knows what's going to make us happy. Like it knows what photo is going to satisfy our desire to create something. But we start questioning it. Oh, well, what's the point of that photo? I saw a photo like that already that someone else took. Is this going to sell as a print, or is anyone going to want this or whatever? That's the side of us that we need to like tamp down and just let that thing come up that says, hey, you should go take this photo. Why? Don't worry about it. Just go take it. Mm-hmm. And then if you go out and take it, it may end up being one of your best photos ever. And people may love it. And then you can kind of trust that inner voice more. That's what's worked the best for me, because every photo I've taken that people tend to respond the best to, was always one of those instances where I just really had this knee jerk response of like, I don't want to take that photo. I need to take that photo. Like that thing has to exist. Otherwise I'm not going to be able to sleep for a little while. And then I'm not thinking about, oh, how's it going to look on Instagram? Or is it fit in with my larger body of work or whatever? I just go out and take it. And those tend to be the ones that people really respond to. I don't know if that answered your question at all. I kind of went off on a tangent.
I don't know if it answered my question either. In fact, I forgot what the question was because I was so enthralled in what it was that you were saying, because that's so interesting. The idea of like, we have to remind ourselves to take the photos that we want to take because it could make us happy. And it made me wonder, like, where do we go wrong? Like, where do we start doubting that? You know, is that like, you know, I don't know, psychologically from like when we were kids and we wanted mm-hmm. to do something and we were told like, no, you can't do that. Or is this something that is now that, you know, because social media is such a big part, we think like, oh, that's actually not that cool. Or who am I as a photographer? And in my head, I was trying to think like, how do we completely avoid that? How do we get around that? How do we find that voice? How do we encourage the, you know, creativity and the freedom and the courage to be able to go out and trust yourself as an artist. Do you have an answer to that? That was a big question.
It's a big question. I have my answer. I'm sure it'll solve all the world's problems, but, I have a couple of thoughts on that. Cause like, I may have a bit of more of a nihilistic approach to this type stuff, because one thing that keeps coming up for me when I'm starting to doubt pictures I want to take, or I'm starting to think too much about, you know, are people going to like it or whatever, I always come back to this thought in my head where I'm like, well, what am I going to do? I'm just going to die one day never having done this. You know, like, we got one life here. Like, I'm not going to do it because I'm scared people aren't going to gush over it, mm-hmm. or like, I'm scared I'll take it and I won't like it. Like, at least I'm going out and taking pictures and using my camera, which is something I love doing. So even if the photos are not good or no one cares about it or whatever, I'm very much doing something I enjoy doing. So at the very least, I'm killing time in a way that I'm happy to be doing. But it really is like, why you just not going to do it? You know, I just kind of have this, maybe it's my older brother or something like that, but I just kind of feel this voice like, so you're just not going to do it? Like, because you think it's not going to get as many likes, or because you think other people aren't going to care about it or whatever. That's such a dumb reason to not do something that you have this kind of deep feeling of wanting to do. You know, I just watched this documentary the other night. It's called The Most Hated Man on the Internet. Mm. And it's about this guy at a website called Is Anyone Up? And he's a terrible person. And his whole persona was like, you know, I don't give a F and I don't care what people think about me and all this kind of stuff. And he had all these people kind of admiring him for that. And there is a certain part of our society that kind of admires like, you know, don't care what people think and you do you and all that kind of stuff. And that's great. I'm basically preaching that right now, but it's good that we all want to please other people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good that we want our photos to be liked by people. Cause if you don't have that in you, you're a sociopath. Like
that guy was.
Those are the people that become serial killers. They don't care what anyone thinks. They don't care what anybody thinks of them. Like, that's not healthy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, as photographers, I think maybe it'd be good to acknowledge, like, it's nothing to be ashamed of, or it's nothing to dislike about yourself, that you want your photos to get likes. You want your photos to have an impact on people. It's not just that you're, you know, some dumb Gen Z who wants the likes. Like, you know, older people can sometimes really denigrate that of like, oh, you should care so much about your likes. Yes, I want people to like what I'm doing because yeah. I'm a human and I want to connect with other people and I want to be accepted by the tribe and all that stuff. So it's okay to want to create photos that other people like. I guess what I'm trying to say is you will create photos people like if you stop trying to create photos people like and you just really listen to your inner self. That's when my photos really started to reach people in the ways that I wanted them to. Back when I was doing the high saturation landscapey stuff, you would get a lot of wows and oohs and ahs and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't reaching people in the way I want to reach them. It didn't feel deep. It didn't feel like they were getting any sense of who I am or what I'm about. It was just felt like kind of cheap tricks to get people to want them. So I think if you start just taking the pictures, you really feel that itch to take. It probably will, maybe not right away, but it'll probably evolve to work that people really do like. So then you can kind of have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah. If we ever get to the point to where like brain implants are like just universally a thing, I'm definitely going to have the older brother, program running to just motivate me to go do stuff.
Yeah.
I love that idea. Yeah. And you know, it was funny, what you were talking about, like, you know, why not, you know, this idea of like, we're going to die someday, you know, and we really have one chance to make an impact. And I think there's been several times in my own life where I've thought like I should go out and shoot. And then of course there's a million reasons why not to, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, the kids are at home. I could play with them, you know, do a million things. I should mow the lawn. But I think I think it was Franz Kafka, a quote who said, the meaning to life is that it ends. And I think about that often of like, wow, like that to me like really stood out and will immediately just light a fire under my butt and like, all right, I gotta go, you know, take some photos. And like you, I have found those moments as well, where it's like sometimes the times where I don't want to go out I've made the photos that I am most thankful for, that I'm that I enjoy the most. And I guess I'm just sharing that. So yeah. In the hopes that somebody who's listening feels that same way, you know, like, oh, I got kids, you know, I work a lot. I got a full-time job. When do I have time for photography? And it's like, well, mm-hmm. when do you not have time for photography? You know, life does end. And if it's really important to you, go out and do it. And I guess that's my soapbox there. But anyway, Nick, I know that we are at the end of our time here, and I really don't know how to end it any better than that last whole sentiment that you made about, like, you know, if you really want to create something, if you really want to make an impact in the world, you do have to put in that work and you have to go get it and do it. And, you know, why not, right? If it's going to make you happy, why not? So before I let you go, first, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything that you have. But I know that listeners are going to want to learn more about you. We didn't even talk about your YouTube channel today, which I had a million questions on. Can you share with us where we can find out more about you and, of course, your YouTube channel as well?
Yeah. Website is nickcarverphoto.com. YouTube is where most people know me from. So you may want to check me out there. It's just at Nick Carver. And then Instagram, Nick Carver. So I was lucky. I'm old enough that I got my name on everything. So
all the spots.
I didn't have to do Nick Carver 01 or anything like
that. What did I tell you? We tackled a ton in this interview today. I think my biggest takeaway from this interview with Nick was just simply how important it is to try new things and just do something, right? He had been shooting on digital before, and yet despite being able to go out, take photos, come back, be able to see those photos, edit those photos, he still decided to take a chance on large format photography and, you know, doing his own projects, going out and just having an idea about something that might look interesting. And he will go out and he will capture it. He will photograph it. And I think that all ties into, once again, just trying new things. Because if you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, you know, I think there's something to be said for, like, you can get better and better each time. But I think for most of us, if photography is a hobby, or even if photography is your bread and butter, how you make money, doing something over and over and over again can feel very monotonous and feel like, okay, I'm just doing this grind here. So seeing Nick be able to go out and just try new things is really cool. And I think that really is my biggest takeaway. Now, I want to take a moment before we leave to showcase Chris, who we're going to call our listener of the week for leaving the podcast a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcast app. Chris says, I found the show totally by accident on the road driving over Thanksgiving. I started listening and love it, especially episode 272 that was with Nick and Kate Story. And then Chris continues, turning my hobby into a full-time job that'll be successful when I move abroad. The Beginner Photography Podcast is helping me move through my sporadic growth to something that I can work on weekly. Very easy to connect with. I love it. Wow, Chris, thank you so much. You know, photography really is about making small moves forward every day, right? Like it's better to take baby steps forward every day than, you know, leaps and jumps maybe once a week or once a month. It's those baby steps that are going to compound over time. And I'm glad that you are enjoying the podcast and that you are putting in the work to become the photographer that you want to be. Now, if you are listening and you're enjoying the show, I cannot tell you how helpful a review or a rating for the show is. You know, it just lets me know that I'm on the right track, creating podcasts that are helping you on your photo journey. So if you are listening in the Apple Podcast app, you can leave a rating and a review. If you are listening on Spotify, which an increasing number of people are, then you can leave a podcast, or you can leave the podcast, a star rating right on the show's main page. And I would, again, really appreciate if you did that. So that is it for this week. Thank you again so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast, brought to you by CloudSpot, which is the easiest way to deliver and sell photos online. If you want to learn more about CloudSpot, just head over to deliverphotos.com. And remember, the more that you shoot today, the better you will be tomorrow. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.